ashamed of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of that good news, Rabbi Paul writes, because it is the power of salvation, the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek or the Gentile. Romans chapter 1, verse 16. That's how you know that you've tuned in to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We come to you every weekday at the same time by the grace of God. And Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. We're your friendly neighborhood Messianic synagogue. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. We're coming to you live today from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500 and also live via Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael. And with me today by Skype is my very, very dear friend and Rabbi Lauren's very, very dear wife, Martha Jacobs. Martha, how are you?
Good. It's great to be here.
And welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher. It's kind of fun to be able to interview you as a guest. This is something I've been looking forward to because you have a really unique and wonderful testimony, Martha, not only as a Jewish follower of Jesus, Yeshua the Messiah, but you are not the first one in your family exactly, are you?
No, and I didn't appreciate when I was a little girl just how special my heritage was because I was the fifth generation Jewish believer in my home.
That's fantastic. Now, Martha, you know, one of the accusations that has been leveled against Jews believing in Jesus over the years is it'll die out with one generation. They'll, you know, it'll never continue, which, of course, is laughable when we think about the fact that there have been Jewish followers of Jesus in every generation across
the
world.
Right.
And yet the accusation is, it'll never communicate down to the second generation. They'll either come back to the fold, so to speak, or they'll be completely assimilated and lose all Jewishness altogether. You're living proof that that is not at all true.
That's right. God has always preserved a testimony for himself, a remnant among the Jewish people. And I'm just fortunate enough that it's been a continuous generation to generation for the past five generations.
That's wonderful. Now, what we kind of wanted to do today, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher, and we are interviewing Martha Jacobs, Rabbi Lauren's wife, who is a fifth generation follower of Jesus, fifth generation Messianic Jew. And Martha, what I'd like to do today, if we can pull this off, is to have you tell us a little bit about the family history, because there's really a great legacy there. And I know that there are Kendalls and Finestones, and after 15 years, I should be able to keep track of who's what. But maybe you could share with our listeners today, first, some of the family history, including some of the geography. And then we'd like to hear your story of wrestling with these issues and coming out on the side of following Yeshua.
Well, thank you. I'd love to do that. Actually, there's a little book that's out of print that whose title really dates it, that's about the life of my great-grandmother, Esther Glazer Finestone Kendall. It's called The Romantic Career of a Twice-Born Jewess. You would never speak that way today. But it begins in the 1800s in Odessa, and at that time, one-third of all the population of Odessa was Jewish.
Now, that's the Ukraine, right? Eastern Europe.
Now, yeah, exactly. And the little town of Zhytomyr there in the Ukraine is where my family was from, and they were a part of the Hasidic Jewish community, the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. And my great-grandmother's father, my great-great-grandfather, Reb Levi Yitzhak Glazer, it's means Levi Isaac Glazer, I found out recently is still known and revered. My brother, when he was in Chicago, was speaking with a group of Hasidic men and rabbis, and they told him that they knew exactly who Reb Levi Yitzhak Glazer was, and that he is still thought of as a revered sage.
Wow, that hit them with some irony that his descendants are now these Jews for Jesus that, of course, are hated. But, well, go on. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Actually, my great-grandmother, Esther, fell in love with her second cousin, Julius Feinstein, who they called Yiddel. Yiddish was the language of the day. All the Eastern European Jewish people could communicate with each other in the language of Yiddish. That's what they spoke as their first language, besides speaking Russian. And Yiddel, or Julius, actually was witnessed to by a Jewish believer and a Gentile Christian, and he came to believe that Jesus truly was the Messiah, a man of character. He not only embraced the truth that Jesus was the Messiah, but he boldly spoke of what he believed to the family. And needless to say, they were very upset. But as time went on, it was thought that my great-grandmother would marry Julius, and they told her that because of his faith, if she didn't want to, she didn't have to, but she decided that she would marry him anyway and win him back to Judaism.
Okay.
Because he was seen as an apostate and a traitor by believing in Jesus. And it wasn't really understood that he was embracing the Jewish Messiah and his identity as a Jew in a deeper, truer way. And in those days, the Ottoman Empire ruled Israel. And so Julius decided, well, Esther was trying to decide what to do, that he would make Aliyah and go to Israel. And he never made it beyond Constantinople because the Jewish population was being limited, you know, the immigration who was allowed into Israel. So he was stuck in Constantinople. He became a cabinet maker and actually made some hand-carved chairs and pedestals that were bought by the Sultan of Constantinople and used in his palace.
Oh, wow. Well, that goes to the proverb about a man whose work is excellent will stand before great men.
Well, he did, and he was faithful to his faith in Jesus, and my great-grandmother made her way to Constantinople, where they were married. She still did not believe. She was just 17 years old when she went to Constantinople.
Wow.
And the first 2 years of their marriage, she really wrestled with his faith. And he really prospered in his business and hired a Orthodox Jewish man who had come from Jerusalem to work for him. And my great-grandmother Esther thought, ah, here's the solution. This man, Enoch, is going to win my husband, Julius, back to Judaism. And so they studied the Bible every night while Esther listened in the rocking chair doing her sewing. And after 2 weeks of the studying the Bible, she walked in and saw Enoch praying with Julius, convinced that Jesus is truly the Messiah. and told his 10-year-old son that he wanted him to know that Jesus was truly the Jewish Messiah.
Wow.
And so she ran into her room, slammed the door, crying. And she finally said, okay, God, if this is the truth, I want to embrace what's true. So please help me know what's true. And I will follow whatever you teach me. And she came out and asked her husband, read to me from the Bible. She felt like that's what God was telling her to do. So he opened the scriptures and he read to her from Isaiah 53. And when she heard, but he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquities, the chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. She knew that God was answering her. She understood that this prophecy was talking about the Messiah whose Jesus' life fulfilled.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So she really had and you know, for our listeners' sake, you know, for Jewish people, it's very difficult. There's a lot of deep-seated emotions, a long-standing tradition. It is not easy for a Jewish person to contemplate even the possibility that Yeshua is the Messiah because of these deep emotions and this long, long, long-standing tradition. But the power of God is able to break through all of that. And that's just wonderful to hear. Well, go on, Martha.
That is so true. But she realized that Jesus really was the last sacrifice. And she said, he's my korban, my covering, my sacrifice. And now I can believe. And so that was the beginning of their journey of faith together as a united couple. And the storm clouds of persecution really did gather for them after that. Julius's best friend turned on him. He became very angry, attacked him physically in a way that put Julius in the hospital. And Esther was pregnant with her oldest son at that point. So she went back to Odessa, and when Julius was released from the hospital, he joined her back in Odessa. And the ministry that they had in Odessa reminds me of some of the stories right out of the New Testament. They were a tight-knit community, the Jewish community there, since they all spoke Yiddish together. They shopped from Jewish storekeepers and vendors, and they spoke about Jesus to all of them. And I can think of one example that really stuck with me. There was a notions vendor that she used to buy things from and talk to him frequently about Jesus. And he was so fascinated that one day he made an appointment with her and, unbeknownst to her, told everybody to gather around and come listen to the woman who was so familiar with Bible prophecy.
Wow.
and the writings of Moses. And when she got there, there was a whole crowd. And she looked at the faces as she was scared. She wanted to run away. She saw that some of them were really hostile and angry, and some of them were really curious, much like the descriptions that you see in the book of Acts, you know, the mixed crowd. Mm-hmm. And she started to preach, and the Holy Spirit gave her boldness, and she spoke the truth. And she had an experience of a supernatural sensation of heat, like a hot girdle of fire around her, protecting her so that no one could touch her or harm her. And she, you know, left triumphantly. And I thought that made an impression on me. Somehow, God's sovereignty, he chose to allow Julius to be attacked and land in the hospital. And yet, he did this supernatural intervention for my great-grandmother Esther. where he protected her, and she was able to preach boldly in Yiddish right there in the streets.
And so the attack led to the return to Odessa.
And he built a whole wood-turning master business there in Odessa, and they had a vibrant ministry to the Jewish community in Odessa until Julius's death. And shortly after that, my great-grandmother married Wolf Kendall, the Jewish believer who had witnessed to her husband.
Wow.
And he was a widower, and interestingly, Esther had led his first wife to the Lord.
Oh, wow. Can I talk about completing a circuit? That's
really,
that's wonderful. Now, if I'm remembering right, Martha, Odessa became a real enclave of Messianic Judaism, or I suppose back then it would have been thought of as Hebrew Christianity, what have you. But Odessa, if I remember right, became really an enclave for thousands upon thousands of Jewish believers in Jesus.
Well, my great-grandparents were certainly a part of that. Wow. And I know that my great-grandmother's first husband, Julius, every night after work would go out with his Bible and talk to people in the area and eventually started a Bible study for the young men who had become believers, building them up to be leaders and missionaries for the next generation.
Wow. Well, let's fast forward, if we can, to I guess your parents.
And, well, let me just tell you that it was from the second marriage, Wolf Kendall, that my grandfather was born.
Ah, okay.
And when she married Wolf, they actually moved to England and became part of one of the oldest Jewish missions there called the Mildmay Mission in London. And that's where my grandfather was born. And eventually they emigrated to Toronto and started worked with the Toronto Jewish Mission that had already been started. And my grandfather, Fred Kendall, was the first one of the family to come to the United States. Interestingly enough, he came to go to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, because at this point, they already had a Jewish studies program in their missions department.
Wow. Now, what year is this, roughly?
I think it was the 1920s.
Wow. And Moody already had a Jewish studies department. That's fantastic.
Yes. So you want me to go on to my parents?
Yeah.
My father grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family. And when he was born, they were living in Mobile, Alabama, of all places. Shalom, y'all.
Yeah.
How they spoke.
Yep.
And it was a small, very tight-knit Jewish community there. And he was bar mitzvahed there. And it was during the time of the Depression that my grandfather, his father, went to Detroit to find work. He was an accountant, and work was lean. Mm. And so that's how my father and his family were transplanted to Detroit, where he found the Lord. In the 1950s, when they moved to when he first started college at Wayne State University as a journalism major, that's when he had a Jewish friend who started telling him about Jesus. And interestingly enough, the same chapter that really God used to grab hold of my great-grandmother, Isaiah 53, is what God used to grab hold of my father. Because when this Jewish friend of his started reading Isaiah 53 to my father, it was so clear to him that these words were speaking of Jesus that he said to her, "Stop reading to me from the New Testament."
Oh.
He did not know that she was reading from the prophet Isaiah in the Old Testament. And those words are what really cut him to the quick from Isaiah. And so he went to, with her, a Messianic Jewish congregation. In those days, they were called Hebrew Christian congregations here in the Detroit area, the first Hebrew Christian Church of Detroit, and my grandfather, Fred Kendall, was the pastor of that congregation. So he helped my father find the Lord, baptize him, and my father married Fred Kendall's middle child, my mother, Lois.
Wow. Wow. Now that we've almost run out of time, it's such a magnificent story.
Well, and my parents today have been living in Israel for 20 years.
That's wonderful. Now, you yourself, were you raised in Boston?
I was. I was raised in a suburb of Boston in a very Jewish community where you were either Jewish or Italian.
But everybody spoke with their hands. I get that.
And liked good food.
Mm-hmm. But now you at some point obviously, you know, had to wrestle issues of faith through for yourself. And how old were you when you just kind of began wrestling with the question of, is Jesus really the Messiah?
Well, I had the privilege of getting a Bible story every night before I went to sleep. So as I was growing up, it was clear to me that my heroes were Jews. So I was always proud of my Jewish identity, knowing that my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, who I was related to, were these great heroes. And about the age of 5 years old, and for parents, you know, this is a developmental age where most five-year-olds are becoming aware of the reality of evil, and the concept of hell really makes sense and is very real. And so that was the first time I really understood that there was a hell and I didn't want to go there. And that's what motivated my decision when I was five to pray and ask Jesus to save me from going to hell so I could go to heaven. That was my first decision. But later on, as an adolescent, I began to wrestle with what's true and wanting to be independent and hoping that the truth was not what my parents believed. And so I went through my own search, and God met me right where I needed and convinced me of the reality of his existence.
So teen angst is nothing new, but
it's actually quite necessary because I couldn't walk around. You know, Jews for Jesus has a saying, being born in a Jewish home, in a Christian home, doesn't make you a Christian any more than being born in a bakery would make you a bagel.
Yep. Yep.
And I could not get to heaven on my parents' faith.
That's right. God doesn't have grandchildren. We each need to become his child. And now we're just about out of time, Martha, and God willing, we want to continue this conversation because then there's the whole second half of the story, and that's you know, working with Jews for Jesus, going to Moody yourself, meeting this interesting guy, Lauren Jacobs, and all the God has done through the two of you together. So we certainly want to hear about that. But let me just say that it's interesting that now there is yet a sixth generation, your children, following the Lord. And I'm thinking especially Aliza, who has married Ellie Marks, and they are now together serving with Jews for Jesus. So we're looking now at six generations.
And given me my first grandchild, Lily, who, God willing, will be the seventh generation.
Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Aliza has a strong personality like you, and Lily has a strong personality like her mom. So we're all watching with great interest to see what God will in fact do with us. So Martha, thank you so much for taking some time, and we want to continue this conversation in the next day or so and
pick up
where we left off. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in to Jesus Made Me Kosher today. Want to again invite you to our website. It's shema.com. That's shema.com. Get in touch with us. We'd be happy to answer any questions for you. And God willing, tune in again tomorrow at the same time. From all of us at Shema, we want to say Shalom. Shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.